Matt and Kimber's Crack the Code.
Crack the Code.
With Perth Safety Deposit Boxes.
Welcome to the podcast. It's Crack the Code Code time.
Okay, yes. Mm. That's why you're here.
Yes.
Well, you get all the best bits of the show. Let's not, like, play that down.
Yeah, they're not bad. I mean, they're good. I'm not going to put us down, but I'd still rather win a $10,000 gold bar with a pink heart gold diamond.
Well, joke's on you. You can only win it if you also listen to the show.
That's true.
Okay. The code is 2525. That's an easy code.
Oh, that feels like a strong kind of Chinese numerological number, doesn't it?
It does.
2525.
It doesn't feel like the one I would put on the safety deposit box.
Like four zeros. No one will get that.
Take that code with you. Make sure you're listening to us from Monday. You'll have your next chance to get on the invitational list to join us at breakfast next Friday here on the Mix 94.5 rooftop. And of course, you'll be one of the people in waiting on that morning to see if you are the winner of a $10,000 gold bar with a pink argyle diamond set in it.
2525.
Not bad. Good luck.
Guys, I'm thinking about making a purchase.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make a purchase for something to wear, but I think it could be really wonderful. I think I could feel really good in it.
Yes.
But there's no question it's incredibly unsexy. I want to buy an hoodie. Have you seen these hoodies?
Are you just not saying hoodie correctly?
These are these giant Sherpa type outfits. I'll show you one so you can see this is an hoodie.
Sherpa.
They're very popular at the moment.
That coming looks into, comfy.
Well, this is it. It looks comfy because it is comfy, and that usually equals not sexy.
Right.
Now, even if you're wearing nothing under that, there's nothing going on there, is it? It doesn't make you go.
Well, like I'm a very strange man, Kimber. You know that.
I don't know if these hoodies, they're very popular. Everybody's getting them, and everybody's doing the rip-off version at your local Kmart's and stuff like that.
That's where I shine.
And I'm conscious because I know that, like, if I wear it, I'll feel amazing in it. I won't take it off all winter because I really feel the cold. Mm. So it'll be sensational, but I think it might destroy my love life.
But you get a his and hers, right? So you're all on the same boat.
I don't want to do that to James.
Would he like it?
No, I don't think he's going to go for that. He doesn't even find activewear attractive.
Mm. So hang on. How far does it come down?
Well, it looks like it's basically over the knee, really.
Yes, over the thigh.
Isn't it?
Right.
It's kind of over the knee. It's a giant. It's basically like if you wrapped yourself in a blanket and then put a hoodie on it.
If it was above the knee and maybe some socks were on or like no shoes or something, like none of those sort of late night granny slippers, you know what I mean? Then I reckon you could get away with it. But below the knee, you're going into unsexy territory.
Look, the thing is, I should commit to it anyway because whatever you feel good in is you, right? And I'm sure your partner accepts that. James would accept that. Of course he would. But I just thought, well, why don't we have a chat about the most, well, I guess the unsexiest piece of clothing that you own.
That you will not get rid of.
That you won't get, you sort of, you know you don't look good in it. You know it's not working for you. You know that it's not hot. No one's going,
But you long for it.
But you want to, you still want to wear it.
All right, unsexiest piece of clothing.
You got something unsexy, Pete?
I've got an example. You got one?
Well, I mean, I find it sexy, but my missus doesn't. And I have a vast array of video game-based T-shirts. And popular culture and stuff like that. And I have like all of the different ones under the sun. I've got, you know, from the Super Mario range. I've got it from the Legend of Zelda range. And if a girl was wearing that in front of me, I'd be like, hey, how you going? Doesn't work the other way though.
No.
I mean, when I saw what this phoner was, what's the unsexiest piece of clothing you own? Of course, I'm thinking, okay, come on, funny boy, come up with something. Turns out I don't need to. You've seen the piece of clothing when you cleaned my car.
Yes.
That pair of undies that barely even fits me anymore. Now, they went from the car back into the drawer, so I'm not joking. Literally, there's no elastic left.
Yeah.
But for some reason, I find them quite easy.
Glenn in Thornley, what's unsexy?
It's not exactly unsexy, but I bought my partner an hoodie.
Okay. Do tell.
So, talk to me, Glenn.
When you're saying it hangs below the knees, when she stands up, well, depending on how tall you are, it actually sits just above the knees.
Oh,
okay. Yeah, there's a bit of sex there, isn't there, Glenn?
There is. Yeah. That's what sort of got me the attraction to it. But obviously when you're sitting down on the couch, you can snuggle into it and that sort of stuff. But I found it quite sexy when she put it on. And I guess the other good thing is that I get my hoodies back.
Ah, yes, I like it.
Great. All right. Well, Glenn finds it sexy. It's not bad.
I wonder if that's why so many people climb Everest. It's not to conquer the mountain. It's just that they find the Sherpas sexy.
Lynn in Kalamunda, good morning to you. What do you got for us?
Hi. I've got this old nightie that I bought 40 years ago. It's got Tigger and Pooh Bear on it. And it's that thin. But I just can't. I wear it every summer. I just can't throw it away.
Oh, 40 years ago.
It's a big joke in the family, you know. Yeah. But I love it.
You know what, Lynn? If you're still fitting into a 90 that you bought 40 years ago,
too right.
Power to you. I'm glad it's see-through. Good on you.
John in Alkabos. Hello, mate. The unsexiest piece of clothing. What do you got?
I've got a rhinoceros onesie at home.
Stop it, John.
A rhino onesie. How often do you pull that out and wear it, John?
Oh, I try and pull it out as much as I can, but my partner doesn't really like it.
Have you worn holes in it, John?
There's a hole fraying down in the crutch area.
Know the feeling.
Yeah, getting there.
Good on you, John. Just commit to the rhino.
Adam, g'day.
G'day, how you going?
Good, mate. What
are you sporting, Adam?
I've got a pair of Speedos.
Mm-hmm.
I brought them in 2007 in Singapore. They're a base black colour, and they've got like, you know, little. They look like little snippets of string in multi. Well, at the time they were like brightly coloured fluoro.
Yep.
But since then, you know, I've washed the hell out of them, and the elastic's starting to go on one side, and I'm starting to wear a hole in the ass cheek on the other.
Right.
But,
where can you wear these, Adam? Are you allowed to wear these out in public?
No, I'm quite sure it would be, you know, I'm sure somebody would call the fashion police. But I don't wear them in public, but I do wear them when I sleep because, you know, they, you know, over time they've, you know, stretched a little bit. And they are the most comfortable things to wear, especially when you want to let the boys roll free when you're sleeping.
So it's like you're contained, with a little bit of extra elasticy space.
That's it.
Oh, good on you, mate.
Oh, wow. And from what you've told us, Adam, if you wear them in public, I don't think it'll just be the fashion police that they're calling.
St. John of God's Hospital's orthopaedic care will move you. And this bloke moves us every time he hits the footy field.
Allen, unbelievable!
It's Pete, Matt and Kimber's very own West Coast Eagle, Oscar Allen.
Good morning to you, mate. How are you?
Yeah, good, thank you. How's the morning doing?
Good. Yeah, very nice, very nice. Well done on the weekend. You managed to stop that thing before it became a thing, but it was never a thing anyway, that thing where you couldn't win away from home.
Exactly right. Well, it was never a thing and forever will never be a thing.
Never be a thing.
Exactly right.
Well played.
Well played.
Thank you very much. No, it's good to get a win.
Yeah, too right.
Well, mate, explain this to me, all right? You pump the Pies and then you get pumped by the Cats and then you go on to pump Freo and Hawthorn. Over that time, what changes? What makes a club go from we're pumping this team, we're getting our asses handed to us, and then we're coming back and we're knocking them over?
If you could also define the word pump for me, that would be super helpful.
Yeah, so I think it's just
beaten and getting beaten.
Yeah, beaten and getting beaten. I think it's just consistency. And footy is such a sport where if you're a tiny bit off, teams can make you pay for it. And also, I think just we had a lot of injuries. Obviously, it's not an excuse, but we probably didn't have some of our best line players out there at the time. And then most of them are our leaders as well. So when shit hits a fan, you look to your best players and your most senior players to kind of hold up the fort. Mm-hmm. So I think it's been good the last probably 4 weeks. Good development for people like myself who are probably up and coming as that next group to experience what it's like when it's on you to try and help the team in a way you can. And yeah, to win 3 of our last 4, obviously that loss was pretty damning, but we're in a great position to play finals and to win as many games as we can.
Oscar, you're a professional and also a grown-up, so maybe this doesn't affect you, but as the weather is about to change, I get these flashbacks of a wet, cold day where I had to get into my netball uniform and go down to the court, and that day was rubbish. I always hated a really wet game. Now that, because that's how footy works, how do you get warm again? Do you still have to do an ice bath on a day like that?
No, you try to stick away from it. I think the wind is worse than the wet. So we had trained yesterday and it was really, really windy and I did not want to go out there one bit. So you definitely don't lose it, the feeling of not wanting to go out when it's cold and windy. But yeah, we often have heat packs in the change rooms. So when the cameras aren't on us, we're all cuddled up to heat packs to get us warm before we go back out there. But it's that's just the nature of a winter sport. But lucky we play here and not in Melbourne every second week, and it's generally really nice here compared to what some of the boys in Melbourne play against.
Yeah.
It is such a privilege to sit and watch two elite athletes talk about, you know, what gets them down in the field of battle.
I played a lot of good netball when I was young, okay? A lot of good netball. That's why my knees don't work.
Yeah.
Now, mate, I need to ask this question because I know that if I'm a West Coast fan listening to you on the radio right now, I would like to know the answer to it. And that is, it's been a big week for the club in light of what's happening with Willy Rioli. How is the feeling around the boys at the moment and thoughts around Willy?
Yeah, obviously it's been a different week. From the playing group perspective, we've just got his well-being at hand. It's been a tough probably 2 years from him. He's had a tough time. Obviously, he's made a mistake and he's paid his time for that. And obviously, another instance has popped up. But I think I alluded to before we're on air with you guys, it's out of the players' control. It's going to be something that's controlled by the club. And whatever decision they make, we'll back them 100%.
Yeah, I guess that's the thing, isn't it? A club as big as the Eagles or any club that at the end of the day, it's the club that is the biggest thing. Players come and go and that's just the way, unfortunately, of professional sport.
Yeah, exactly right. Mm. But in saying that, I think the club in West Coast ourselves, we do a great job of thinking about the person first rather than the persona of the athlete. So they'll have his mental health as their first priority for Willy, and I'm sure we'll take care of it in any way they can.
Yeah, whether he comes back or not.
Yeah, exactly right. Lovely,
this might be a stupid question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Like, is it something that the club actually talk to you about and sit down and go, guys, don't do this, don't do that, don't do that? Or is it just an expectation that you're playing professional sport and these things are, you have certain expectations you have to meet?
Yeah, so when you get drafted, you have a 3-day camp in Melbourne and you go through your anti-doping, so your party drugs, I suppose, that kind of side of it. You go through your performance enhancing drugs as well. You go through respectful relationships and you do a lot of courses about how you should act in public and also what's acceptable and what's not as a footballer. And then every year you also have to do a number of courses online and they come into the club. So it's something which the education of it's become really, really important. And I think this issue itself, obviously, Willy's from a different cultural background. Mm. It's become pretty prevalent how important it is to educate people that probably didn't have the same background as you or myself.
Yeah, right. Mm.
Times have changed because back in the day, they would have taken the young blokes on a 3-day bender.
Yes, exactly
just
right.
To welcome them to the sport.
Yes.
Wouldn't they?
Yes. Yeah, it's changed a little bit from how it used to be.
Oscar, you guys welcome Adelaide over. 2:40 bounce down this afternoon. Just quickly, who are you going to this weekend? Who's your fort?
This weekend, I think I might, I gave you a hint a couple of weeks ago. I think I might be up forward this weekend.
Yeah.
So, I'm not locking that in. I think there's a couple guys who still need to test, but I think there might be a chance I'll be playing up forward. So we'll just have to wait and see what happens. But yeah, hopefully I can get on the score sheet this weekend. Wait and see.
Good luck, mate.
Thank you very much.
Today is the Royal Flying Doctor Street Appeal. Please give generously across the CBD today. And on Monday, Forgiving Day to help the RFDS. They do an incredible job every day, as you're about to hear, when a young girl by the name of Hannah and her mother joined Matt and Kimber.
Hannah, Casey, good morning. Welcome.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks.
So glad to see you, Hannah. What an extraordinary story. Stung by an Irrawaddy jellyfish. I mean, I don't even know where to start. I mean, obviously it was a horrific ordeal and it hurt a lot. I mean, you describe it as feeling like your heart and lungs were crumbling.
Yeah, I said that. I said I could feel like my insides like turning to mush. Like it was just, yeah.
So, Hannah, tell us, you know, you're out swimming. You said you felt like you had been stung by a jellyfish. You definitely did feel the sting.
Yeah.
How long before you started to realise, oh, hang on, this is not your average jellyfish?
Oh, it was like immediately after, because I was with my friend Zoe and I said I'd been stung by a jellyfish. And I used to be stung by a jellyfish all the time because I used to do surf life saving.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew what that felt like. And I just said, I've been stung by a jellyfish. And he was like, she said, are you okay? And I said, yeah, I'm fine. As soon as I said I'm fine, like I was feeling really dizzy and like I went numb basically. And she was like, I didn't tell her what was wrong because I didn't know. Like I just thought I was overreacting. because I had been stung by a normal jellyfish before and I didn't know these ones existed.
Because, of course, you're in the Pilbara.
Yeah.
And so you're not expecting to get the Irrawaddy down that far, but you were told or you believe that because of cyclonic winds and whatnot, they may have been pushed a bit further south?
Yeah. But I had no idea they even existed. So I genuinely thought I was over-exaggerating and... Yeah.
And so how did you get out of the water? How did your friend get you back in?
Well, we were actually swimming towards the shore when it happened. We jumped off the boat and we were swimming towards the shore. And when we got to the shore, I stood up and I was obviously really dizzy and I was in pain. And she was like, why are you being weird? And I was like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know what's wrong. And I was like, it's because I haven't eaten. And I just thought it was because I hadn't eaten and I was dehydrated. And I was like, I need to go back on the boat.
Now, of course, if you were further north, people would be going, oh my God, this is probably an Irrawaddy.
Yeah.
And thank God for the Royal Flying Doctor Service that you're still here to tell the tale. But I do have this question because in the notes that I've got, it says here that one of the bizarre symptoms of this sting is you get this feeling of doom.
Doom, yeah.
And so that wasn't just the pain, it was almost like an emotional thing where you're starting to say goodbye to people.
I knew I was dying. Like, oh, it wasn't even like a question,
Mum, Casey, where were you when all of this was unfolding? You didn't know this was happening.
No, completely unaware that this was going on. We were actually, my husband and my son and I were at home, and it's crazy because we were watching like trashy TV and there was a steak advert. And I said to my husband, I think I want a steak. So off he goes in the car, and next minute I get this call saying you can either meet us at the hospital or you can meet us at the shore. Something's happened to Hannah. So I'm like, didn't know what to do. Tried to ring hubby and his phone was on the bench. I'm like, oh my God, he's took the other car. Mm-hmm, we have another car. I'll grab the keys and I'll get into that. The light was on red for petrol. I'm like, oh my God, I didn't know what to do. Like, panic. So I was like, you know what, bugger it, I'll just make my way to Dampier, and if the car stops, it stops, I'll hitch a ride to the boat. And that haunts me, this image of the boat coming in with my friend Mitch holding a towel just up for shade, but he's literally just got tears streaming down his face. So at that point in time, I thought she'd gone. And he said to me, we thought we'd lost her a few times on the way.
And was Turns Hannah being resuscitated?
Practically unconscious by that point.
I was going in and out of consciousness. I was just rolling my head, vomiting. And
luckily, one of Mitch's friends, small town, Karatha, everyone knows everyone. And this lady who was literally covered in her vomit looked up at me, and it was my friend who I work with. And and then the long wait for the volunteer ambulance to get there. So it's waiting and waiting. I actually beat the ambulance, and I found out after it's because they're run by volunteers that, you know, they have to mobilise and get them to you and all of this. So
okay, so you're at Karatha Hospital, and at this stage, had anyone said to you, we think it's this? Or
happened on the boat. Mum's friend from work who was there, she said, I think it's an Irrawaddy.
Okay.
But I had no idea what that was.
Sure.
And I was just like, yeah, cool. But I didn't care what it was, really. Like,
I was just
too focused on the pain.
So they put you in an induced coma. And how long was it before they actually said, she's in the clear?
That was a long time. There's a few eerie moments for me. Putting her to sleep was very interesting because this overwhelming sense of calm came over the entire hospital.
Mm.
It's important to know that it wasn't just us going through it. The whole entire staff were feeling every scream. So when we woke her up, she started eating a piece of toast, and then I was watching her. I'm her mum. I know her. And I said to the doctor, she's going to start complaining in a minute. Her feet are going to hurt. And they were like, nah, it's all good. And I was like, you just wait. And she started complaining. So the pain had come back.
Oh.
And so the toxicology people said that when they put her to sleep to rest her lungs and her heart, the toxin slowed down. So they just went to sleep too.
Oh, no.
And so resting her was just to allow the lungs to clear and her heart to heal so she could fight again. And so, they were pushing adult morphine through her body, and she sat up.
In the coma.
In the coma, scared the bejesus out of her nurse.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah.
The power of this venom, right?
Yeah.
Mm. Extraordinary.
And after I woke up, like every time I moved, that's when I'd have one of those like pain episodes and I'd be screaming again. Like it was just like movement which caused it.
Yeah. One of the doctors teared up. It was really emotional because she was biting the pillow because we're on a children's ward. Yeah. She didn't want the kids to get upset. So she was really biting this pillow. And he just said to me, I don't know what to do. I'm a doctor and I don't know how to take this pain away. No. I just don't know what to do. And
you wouldn't be here without the Royal Flying Doctor service. And I guess it reminds us why we need a service like that in a state as big as ours.
Yeah.
Because, you think about Karratha and you think, well, that's a hell of a drive. And I'm sure the medical services in Karratha are excellent, but you needed to be in specialist care. And it's because of a service like the Royal Flying Doctor service.
Yeah, absolutely. I was warned that they were coming, and when she started coughing blood, I'll never forget it because I literally was about to blow. And this nurse, I don't know who she was, she's amazing. She just literally pushed me through the door into reception of the hospital I go, where there's half of Karratha in there anyway, small town. Everyone's like invested, what's happening? And Mitch was there and he caught me and he said, "The look on your face, I thought she'd gone."
Mm.
And I was like, "Mate, the look on my face, I think she is going. I just don't know what to do." And I found out it's the nurse pushed me through the door, because if I had panicked and reacted and been angry, I wouldn't have been allowed on the plane.
Oh, really?
Because
looking after you.
Yeah, because they know that if you're reactive, you can't go on this plane with these doctors. Yeah. So she knew that Mama was struggling and needs to go get a cuddle from someone. And we bonded on that flight. Like, I'd watch them perform miracles. They take over. They took over in the hospital. They just, it's this overwhelming sense of someone's got this, and I can't even describe it. It's like they're carrying you, and your entire faith goes into those people.
Absolutely. Wow.
And so years later, Hannah, back in the water, you had anything that's kind of lingering from that?
Yeah, the first time I went back in the water, I was at Monkey Mile, and it was like a year later, and I'm not even joking you, I got in the water and then I got stung by a normal jellyfish.
Oh,
the exact same spot. And I dived in the water, I felt it, I came back up and I was like, "Mum, I've been stung by a jellyfish." And she thought I was joking, and I just showed her my arm, and I was a mess. I was like, "Oh my God."
And Bet, like
take up rollerblading, Hannah. Honestly, get out of the water. Bless you. Well, so happy that your story ended that way, and thank God for Royal Flying Doctor Service and for all those people in Karratha too who stepped up and helped you. So,
yeah. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing your story.
What a story. Whoa. Wow.
That was fascinating. I felt really lucky to actually be a listener for a change. Outside of that, because I couldn't join you guys in that chat. But that was absolutely incredible. And it does just go to show just how important the Royal Flying Doctor Service is when it comes to everyday sort of emergencies that happen across our state and across the country.
And I think that idea that it's not just people who are living regionally, that all of us could find ourselves in this situation. So it's about everybody.
And there's not many places in the world that deal with that vastness of space. You know, we need them.
Give generously. The street appeal is today. You'll see people rattling tins up and down the CBD. 93 years, by the way. They've been going for a long time and very strong. But thanks to your help. And Giving Day, you can donate across Monday as well. We'll bring you more of that come Monday post the weekend.
Guys, yesterday on my listener app was playing some tunes, blending some songs together.
Oh, yeah.
Heard a song that I haven't heard in a while, big hit while I was in high school, and there was one particular line from it that I just had a bit of a moment with. "You can always go on Ricky Lake." Now, that song lyric, it occurred to me that there are probably a bunch of people right now who might know that song, might be hearing it. It's back in play in some places. And don't even know who Ricky Lake is.
Now, this was really interesting this morning, right? And I've just brought the producer mic up, right? Is Georgia, if you guys, there's a lot of commotion going out there at the moment, right? But can we get Georgia just on the mic really quickly? Hey, Jay.
Hey.
Now, how old are you, Jay?
22.
So you were born in what year?
I was born in 98, September of 98.
Okay. Do you know who Ricky Lake is?
No.
Do you play for the Wildcats?
Yeah, like, is he a skater or is that a band or something?
Well, it's a woman, for starters.
Okay.
See, that's the thing. This popular song now doesn't have any relevance because people don't understand. Ricky Lake was a TV talk show host from 1993 to 2004.
And an actor.
She's an actress, yeah. And but she had one of those talk shows, one of those controversial ones, kind of like a Jerry Springer type show, that was a bit like, you know, episodes where it would say like, hey, one of you five is the father of my baby.
Yeah.
An alien made me pregnant. Yes.
Those types of shows. And it made me think of all these talk show hosts like Phil Donahue.
Oh, Donahue.
Ricky Lake, yes. Jerry Springer, all of them leading to like Ellen DeGeneres, who has now said, I'm stepping down. Enough. Next season's going to be my last season because of all the toxic stuff that was going on in her workplace. And she's lost half her audience now. People don't want to watch anymore. Like, how far it's come. Ricky Lake's got five fathers on there going, who's the father of my baby? Jerry Springer used to break out in fights all the time.
Oh, I remember.
And now Ellen's stepping down.
Remember Jerry? He would always finish with his final thought, wouldn't he?
Oh, that's right, Jerry's thought.
Yeah. Because they all have something. Like Ellen, even though she's gone and on her way out, she's got the dance. Mm-hmm. She would do the dance.
Yes.
Jerry would have his final thought.
Yep.
And Ricky would have the go, Ricky.
Go, Ricky. Go, Ricky.
I think I've got some go, Ricky in there.
Can you imagine setting a wedding date and planning the wedding before you've even found a man to marry? Today, we'll meet women who say they are getting married within a year. And though there's no man in their lives right now, they're going to set their marriage plans in motion right here.
It's not there. We'll have to
I'm watching that. Like straight off the bat, I'm watching that.
Do you think also the soundtrack they're playing in the background there has been the same sound and the same music they've played for every talk show host?
I thought it was Baker's Delight.
What a week, what a week, what a week, what a busy old week. The week in Perth,
Well, look, I thought I'd better do my job properly and actually do this segment reflecting the news stories of the week rather than just sort of one subject that interested me.
We've left it quite creative. We've said that it's your baby and you can do whatever you want with it every Friday.
And I'm clearly not handling the pressure. So, yes, we've had a busy old week. Of course, the Dockers flying off to Brisbane and then we could get rid of the face masks and dear old Bert Newton, of course. They had the Chinese rocket. Lots happened.
It's a lot.
The budget. Remember that?
Oh, yes. Yeah, the budget.
And, of course, all of that done over the finger over the pause button of Pete Carelli having a baby.
At any moment.
Literally any moment.
We've been waiting since the first contraction last Thursday.
Yeah. Tell me about it. So try living in that house.
Here is that story. But the thing that you may not know, Kimber, of course you will, is that Pete and I have been going on a bit of a doing everything to the sound of Chris Cornell. This week, too.
Yes, I've heard
so I thought I'd throw in a bit of that as well.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
The Dockers lost in Brisbane. Eagles triumphed at the J. Finally took off our face masks. Made me very happy to breathe my stale breath away from me. The budget landed Tuesday. By the Wednesday, it was clear. They were spending too much money. Sure, we'll pay it all back in about a million years. And we all wait for Corelli's baby. Oh, come on, Liz. A hot bath in a Corel. A week in Perth. That's how it went down this week in Perth. Health scare for old Bert Newton. Yeah, Moonface lost his leg. We're all worried for Rioli. No more flights to Darwin with a Ziploc sandwich bag. We all wait for Corelli's baby. Come on, Liz, a hot bath and a Corel.
week in Perth. That's how it went down. That week in Perth. That's how
Amazing. I don't know what I'm more honored about or inspired by. Getting a mention in one of your songs or you getting through an entire song as Chris Cornell.